Welcome to How Can We Help, the advice podcast hosted by two casual advice givers.
Yeah, I think by now we can start crediting ourselves. At least we're casual and consistent.
And if that's not something, I don't know what is.
And thank you, Mark, for being here. And I'm Jackie, the co-host.
That's right. And with us is a very special guest today. It's Adam Christie.
Thank you. Hi, everyone.
Oh, God. We're so happy to have you here, Adam.
No one better to give advice than a certified failure with no rudder in his own life.
No rudder.
No rudder.
No rudder. Wow. That's a boat term.
You did boat here.
and he was very late.
Yeah.
I was incredibly late.
Talking about boat traffic.
To be fair, you said that you guys were 10 minutes late, so I took that upon myself to move how late I was going to be to the new late.
The
time.
New late, right.
So I was already going to be 10 minutes late, and I was like, thank God, an excuse
to be. So now you're 25 minutes. But the thing is that you were driving, so what, did you just start driving really slow?
Yeah, I started just driving to Niagara Falls.
You're a big get. I don't think you're rudderless at all. I think you just came off of a big UK tour.
Thank you so much.
Opening for, and if this doesn't spell success, I don't know what does, a puppet.
Yeah.
The world's most premier puppet comedian, I'd say.
Randy Feltface.
Yes. And his master.
We can say that. I didn't say it.
Wait, he doesn't like to know people to know that?
Are we breaking kayfabe?
Are we doxing this puppet?
Yeah, just saying the name is about to get swatted.
We're going to swat the puppeteer.
Because I've met him. I have met him.
Yeah, he's great.
He's so nice.
He's the best. And so nice to tour with. Oh my God, it was such a nice time. And then I went to Barcelona and instantly got the flu the first day. And I spent the first 2 days in Barcelona in a hotel room.
No. And well, not just in the hotel room, probably in the hotel room bathroom within the hotel room.
Yep.
Oh, Adam.
But it's so nice to get violently ill inside Gaudi architecture.
Yeah, it was at the Familia Sagrada, or whatever it's called.
The puppet must have had its mind blown by all of that intricate architecture.
Oh, the puppet. This was after the puppet.
Oh, this is post-puppet?
Yeah, Randy went to JFL London, which I was not invited to.
Oh, no.
Not by Randy, by JFL. Let's cut that out.
No, but keep that in.
Okay, let's keep it
in. They couldn't just, you were already with them. They couldn't just say, come along.
No,
they had one spot for you.
I don't think headliners can just be like, hey, I'm doing JFL. Can I bring my opener?
No, I did not expect that. No, the tour is the best. Randy's the best. The guy who operates Randy, who will not be named, is the greatest man in the world.
I had no idea that was a thing, that you can't say his name.
No, you can't say his
name. Okay.
I don't know how I feel about all this.
You're not even allowed to say Jeff Dunham's name vis-a-vis the puppet. You have to talk about Jeff Dunham, and then you have to talk about Ahmed the terrorist. You can't say that they're connected.
Can I tell you that up until that moment, my life has been so blissful because I didn't know what one single puppet's name or character.
But you probably know the catchphrase, I kill you!
I don't. I didn't. I've somehow managed to block out all of that shit.
Have you never hung out with one of Toronto's young, ironic comedians? That's like their favorite shit in the world.
Wait, Mark, how many of Jeff Dunham's puppets can you name?
Oh, I only know Ahmed, but I can picture the old man, but I can't remember his name.
His name is Walter.
Walter, that's right.
Yeah. And then he has another like pink puppet. God, what's its name? Peanut? Peanut.
Stop it.
Stefan knows all the Jeff Dunham gossip. I love so much that the game of that whole act is a puppet says something offensive. And then the man holding the puppet goes, hey, come on.
Is that what he does?
He doesn't agree. Say that.
Oh, God.
There's this, and everyone watching is like, if only he could control that puppet. You got to get that thing under wraps.
But I think his new special is called, like, canceled or something. Like, yeah, even Jeff Dunham.
It's Jeff saying nasty stuff, and the puppet's going, hey, whoa, they kill you for that.
Oh, well, I can say that. You can't say that.
Jeff, how do I put this? You can't get away with that.
I love how he didn't know how to put that.
And I like how we audibled our puppet impressions to be non-specific races. It was just this guy.
Yeah, who knows who that guy is or where he's from.
Could be white.
Yeah. Adam, thank you for doing this. And As you know, this is a podcast about advice, and we will be giving some advice to anonymous, I don't even know what we call them, askers?
Anonymous beggars? Troubled askers.
Yeah, the troubled masses that confide in us.
You guys have cracked into Ocean's 11 style, the kids' help phone, right?
Yes, we put together a team to break into the kids' help phone.
We've got hours of recordings. Hours.
Steal the voice messages. Here's the problem. We accidentally erased them on our way to stealing them, so I don't know that they're going to get the help from the professionals they need. So hopefully most of those kids are tuning into this.
Great. And I think they are.
Just a quick question for the group. Did any of you ever call the kids' help phone as a kid?
No. I had no problems when I was a kid.
I didn't. I didn't really either. I didn't ever called kids' help phone, but know what I did call? Not accidentally. there was. I don't know if you remember. You would remember this because you're from Cambridge, Adam, and I grew up in Guelph. We had the same cable, probably.
Yeah.
But this was coming from Quebec. JoJo's Psychic Alliance.
Absolutely not.
Oh, she looked like Barbie. She had big blonde hair. Do you know who I'm talking about, Mark?
I don't.
JoJo's Psychic Alliance. No. Stefan does. So she looked like a Barbie, but big blonde hair. This Quebecois woman that was like, "Call me and I'll help you with all of your problems, JoJo's Psychic." And I didn't even know what that was. I was so little, and I asked my mom, "What's this?" But I mispronounced, and I said, "What's a sidekick?" And she goes, "Sidekick." I'm like, "Yeah, like what's a sidekick?" I seen it on the TV.
I bet you your family ran with that for years.
Well, they did, but my mom didn't know what I was talking about. She goes, "Well, it's kind of like, you know, it's like a friend that's always kind of with you. It's like Ed McMahon on Carson. It's kind of
that's
like,
the example that she used."
Yeah. She's like, "He's always kind of beside you and kind of joking around with you, and it's your friend." I'm like, "Ooh la la, that sounds great." So I called this 900 number the next time I saw it, and it puts you on hold forever. Just wait, JoJo will be with you. Running up the bill, it was like $3 a minute or something like that. Wow. And then a couple of weeks later, my dad at breakfast, "Who the hell ran up $75 on JoJo's? What's this bullshit?" And I was like, and I didn't tell anyone. I went to school and felt sick all day. Like I've made a huge mistake. And I confessed to my mom. I called JoJo because she's a sidekick. And my mom's like, "Oh, fucking hell." So then my mom called Belle and explained and got her credit card or something and got the charges reversed.
Wow. You know that song "Get Back" by the Beatles where they're like, "JoJo was a..."
Yeah.
They're singing about that show, I think.
No way.
About the Guelph cable access psychic show.
It was being pumped into Southern Ontario from Quebec. This is how Quebec's constantly fucking with us.
Did you know that someone told me that Kitchener, Ontario is a test market for brands? Like,
yes.
They will get like the McRib with cheese or something?
Right, yeah.
Man, we didn't know how good we were getting it in the Tri-City
area. Do you remember,
area.
What was it called? Not Moneris. There was like a cat, like a money, like a bank that was tested in Guelph and Kitchener.
Whoa.
What was it called? And like my grandpa was one of the only people that had it because he had money to burn. Yeah, it is a test population because it's for some reason like an ideal demographic for launching and testing products and stuff.
Do you ever go to McDonald's and you see like this new signature sandwiches? It'll be like the Monterey Jack chicken spicy, and you're like, "Who gets this?"
Oh my god, I did a podcast with Hisham and Matt Malent.
Bits and Bites,
and we got this KFC sandwich that was basically just a chicken, like Popeye's chicken sandwich, KFC chicken sandwich, but with a hash brown on it and a little hole tunneled into the hash brown with a little cup of gravy next to it. And you could pour as much of the gravy as you liked into this hole of cheesy hash brown on top of a chicken patty.
Wait a minute.
Oh my God.
Hold on. So describe it's a sandwich, or is the hash brown the bun?
No, the hash brown's in the bun. So there's already so much starch in there. There's bun. There's potato. There's an Irish person who hands it to you.
Oh. Okay, that's way too far.
If this, you have to go to Ireland to get it, and they plead with you to take their children with you.
And then they rely solely on this sandwich for their food their food.
Every 100 years, the sandwich runs out, and oh Lord, what are we to do? Oh, the famine again.
On what will we pour our gravy?
So in the sandwich, there is a hash brown with a hole in the middle.
Yeah.
And then you also get
that's how the light gets in.
And then And then they give you a separate cup of gravy. Now, can I ask, is there a spout on the cup?
No, it's like one of those, like,
just a Dixie cup. Like
a big Dixie cup. Like basically like a miso soup size takeout cup.
Oof.
Like a big ass fucking gravy trough.
Did you get it?
I got it for this podcast. They gave it to me. And then we had to try it and comment on it, review it.
I think
and
all
my,
of these...
And my Yelp review was less of a Yelp and more of a gulp. More of a, get me out of here. More of a check, please.
We got to clip that. Are these cameras on? Because that's what we're clipping for this episode.
But also yelping is kind of, is that sound, isn't it, at the end of the day?
Would you say
like
Yelp
Yelps in a positive context?
Would you say Yelp is a dog sound a bit?
Yelp
is
Yelp.
Yeah, okay. Let's say that. My reaction was less of a Yelp and more of a woof.
Okay, yeah.
I actually have a hierarchy of dog sounds that I've had in, like, I've made this kind of schema, and it goes, it's called the Yip-Roo scale, and you can place dogs on it, and, like, the very littlest dog is yip, 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 yip.
Yep.
And then it goes from yip to arf, 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 arf.
Uh-huh.
Then to bark, 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 bark. Yip, arf, bark. And then rough, woof, 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 woof.
Right.
That's like a mid-size, like a husky.
God, you're rough. You spilled my coffee.
That's a dog. That's a dog. When you did the big rough, I pictured a dog with like fucking whiskey in a barrel around
exactly
its neck
him.
Coming to your aid.
Yeah, but then you get Roo, which is the biggest. Malamutes, Mastiffs, woo, woo, woo. Like their mouth doesn't even like hardly open. They're so big and floppy when they go woo, woo, woo. So that's the Yip Roo scale. So Yelp does, I could see it fitting in somewhere. I'm so sorry that my violent barking spilled your coffee, Adam.
Much
and
like a
I'm,
real dog.
Stefan, I'm so sorry that, yeah, this would happen with a real dog.
Yeah. And not real dog, which are like the fake dogs that you have sex with. It's like a real dog.
Yeah, I went to a real dog cafe.
Can I pitch you guys a comedy sketch?
Please. Yeah.
It's like a, so this is like a modern millennial, like you'd see this on one of these, like the modern sketches for teens. It's like one of those barrel dogs, like say you're in the forest and it's freezing and you're about to die. And finally, this is a millennial.
Yeah. Can you be trapped in a tree well maybe?
Yeah.
My parents always warned me about skiing too close to tree wells.
So you're stuck in a tree well and this person's like 24 and he's going to die. And then one of these dogs with the barrels come up and it's filled with whiskey. And then he goes, do you have an edible, actually? And the dog's like, and he goes, or like a partake. Or... So let's clip that and we'll send it to my old job.
And the dog turns and the dog turns around and this trapped Gen Z eats its ass.
Wait, what is a tree well? I never skied.
It's like when you, if you can picture, it's like if you got lots of snow, it kind of makes a little... It kind of caves in a little around a tree.
Okay.
It's like you can see it like dip, little dish.
Okay.
And basically...
And then they give you a little cup of gravy and you can pour it in the middle.
You can pour as much as you want.
Yeah, you have to fill up the well. And it's annoying. So the reason you have to avoid them is it's annoying.
Can I just say something once more about this gravy? Is that I love how it's like this giant, big, disgusting bucket, as you describe, of gravy. Yeah. Oh, but you can pour as much as you want. I feel like the people who are buying this sandwich in earnest, the amount that they want is probably the whole bucket, no?
No, I think like even people who think they want this sandwich, and this is my assumption, once they actually see it all together, they're like, oh, God, no.
It's an abomination.
It's an abomination because... Popeyes has shown us that all we need and desire for a chicken sandwich is like a big piece of like non-symmetrical chicken, two buns, and like two pickles.
Okay.
And then like the thinnest layer of whatever the hell that cream is. Is it mayo? Is it? I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's so simple. And then at KFC, I think they have that. But this thing is just like, even the hash brown is a bridge too far. And there's cheese. We don't need the cheese.
Can I
say,
even without the sandwich, what you're describing, these like normal size bun, biggest piece of chicken, I feel like we're hitting a chicken bubble, a chicken sandwich bubble.
Mm.
I don't like where chicken sandwiches are going. It's too intense.
It is intense. Yeah. Yeah.
It's too much chicken.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can't even get your hand around the chicken to hold the bun. It's too much.
Right, I know you're saying this critically, but everything you're saying could work in a chicken sandwich ad. It's too much. You can't even get your hand around the bun. What are they thinking?
And
for how much? How are they making a profit? It's a bubble and it's going to burst. I guess we got to get in now.
But you're absolutely right, because then when the piece of chicken becomes that big, then the chicken meat, which is actually quite boring on the inside, the mm-hmm. white breast meat, mm-hmm. and then to the ratio to that with the fried and battered skin is too much. Like yeah. it's, yeah. it overpowers the battering.
Yeah. Sometimes that's true. Yeah. Yeah. Because what you want from a Popeyes is you want those pickles. You want that skin.
The spicy sauce.
Mayo. And then sometimes, yeah, when I get a mouthful of too much just pure chicken
dry chicken meat.
It does feel a little bit like an Irish man muscling his way through a tater.
Really taking down the Irish in this podcast.
Oh, yeah, the Irish
Haven't
are not
safe been through
here.
Enough?
No.
Can I say I was just in Ireland and
the
I
troubles
went...
are just beginning.
On this, episode 13.
Now, Adam, as you know, this is an advice podcast, so I was wondering, do you have a relationship with advice? Because you're a touring comedian, and we all do lots of comedy. We're all comedians. Mm-hmm. And so we've all received comedy advice. Mm-hmm. Older comedians love nothing more than to bring you under their wing and feed you with advice that is, at best, neutral.
At best. And absolutely. typically psychotic.
Yeah, typically a little bit destructive if you were to take it. Have you ever received any good advice in that way?
Well, I went to the Humber School of Comedy, which is a comedy program in Etobicoke, Ontario, where you pay $4,000 and they teach you how to make ham in a microwave. And you know what? I'm here to say a lot of people, because if you're not part of the comedy, if you're not part of the Toronto comedy community, first of all, get in it. It's the best thing you could ever do for yourself. And you know what? I'm being serious. It's fun. Look how much fun we're having right now.
And if I could just say this about the Humber program, this is my impression of it. I always thought it was like a teaching staff of like aging comedians who line you up on day one and then every subsequent day, and they stand in front of you and they just chant the words, "Remember us. Remember us. We were here."
And then they all make it so that they all kind of combine like psychologically to be in one of your bodies.
Yeah.
Yeah,
they pick one of you and then they all get this transplant. Yeah. I was thinking being John Malkovich, but
oh, yeah. Yeah, it's both.
Yeah, it's the Canadian Get Out, Get Oot.
Just let me open my notes app.
We should do, why hasn't 22 minutes done Get Oot yet?
Get Oot.
Stephen Harper is back in the body of whom? Oh no.
I'm trying to think of any good bad advice that I've been given. Because you know what? I was going to talk about the Humber School of Comedy, but people give it so much shit. And you know what? It's not that bad.
Yeah.
People talk about the famous make ground beef in a coffee machine.
Sorry, I've never heard of this story
people
ever.
When they talk about Humber.
We don't know these people.
Who are these people?
Make fun of the Humber Lakeshore Campus School of Comedy program that many comedians go to and many people who do not become comedians, they often bring up this is so stereotypical, the class where they teach you how to make ground beef in a coffee pot. And yes, that does happen. No. They do teach you how to make.
What are you talking
about? But why are you now forgetting about what you also just said, which was something about ham? Ham in the microwave.
I was thinking, it wasn't ham in the microwave. It was ground beef in the coffee pot.
What are you talking about? And when people explain it,
there's a class that is
no,
called,
there is.
No,
there's a class that's
the
called
curriculum.
Rules of the Road, and,
no, it's,
and
not.
It's how to save money on the road. And one of the things that
this
they teach
real?
You is that how to make ground beef in a coffee pot. I'm surprised you haven't heard this because everyone talks about this. They teach you how to make an egg on a lamp. They teach you how to. They teach you how to go. They teach you how to make you get a lower rate room without a fridge, but then you use the ice machine and one of the garbage pails to make a fridge.
Is
you can
this
put your,
real?
To
this is not
put
real,
your ground
Adam.
Beef
this
in.
This feels like this is a college run by like train hobos teaching you how to survive.
Wait, why
one
would you
week
wanna,
longer.
Why would you want to refrigerate your ground beef so soon after? Surely not enough time has passed. You make so much ground beef in the coffee pot that you have leftovers?
Well, you have to also keep it raw before you make it in the coffee pot.
Before it goes in the coffee pot.
Before it goes in the coffee pot.
Sorry, I didn't take
here's
this.
Here's something that I actually used. Is one of the tips on the rules of the road class was you call up a movie theater during the day, because if you're in a town that you don't live in, you call up a movie theater and you go, "Hey, I'm a comedian. I'm in town, and I'll trade you tickets to the show for free movie tickets." And that was one of the rules on the road. And I actually did that in Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada.
And it worked.
At the same time, there's a 1 year post-grad program. And when I was there, it was me. You guys know Freddie Rivas. Love Freddie Rivas.
Of the Rivas clan.
It was Nathan McIntosh. Bobby Mayer was in it. And then the post-grad was our friends Tim Gilbert was in it.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Nathan Fielder of fame.
Never heard of him.
Was in it. Yeah. Who else was in the post-grad? I can't remember. But, you know, a lot of great comedians go to this. A lot of great comedians are out there making ground beef in a coffee pot.
But is in the post-grad curriculum, is that how to avoid room fee charges by cleaning out the coffee machine? Is that where you learn to scrub out the ground beef from?
Oh, there was no mention of cleaning the coffee machine.
No, you don't need to clean.
So the next person who stays in that hotel tries to make coffee, rude awakening.
And then their coffee has all the oily kind of puddles on top, like the grease rising to the top of the coffee. Surely it would.
But I'm here not to talk. I'm here not to make fun because everyone who goes to Humber brings up the coffee pot. But you know what? I learned it was a good experience.
Wait, are you going to finally teach us how to make ground beef in a coffee pot?
It's easy. You put the ground beef in the place where you put the coffee filters. You run it twice just to be safe and you got ground beef.
Could I just say, I visited Nathan Fielder in LA once and obviously he's doing very well and his home was very nice. Uh-huh. But I did notice that the tops of his lamps were all very greasy with egg fat. And he kept saying, don't use that coffee maker. We'll go out and get something.
So basically it's boiled ground beef because the hot water is running through it like it would through coffee.
That's right.
Oh my God. That's so
But don't
bad.
Just focus on that.
Okay,
there's
yeah,
other.
Yeah.
That is one. That's one. That is one class out of 10. Class out of 8 different classes, so we're talking about 80 classes, and just one of them mentions ground beef in a coffee pot.
Okay, now I have a feeling.
So people running around talking shit about the Humber Comedy Program at Humber Lakeshore, they act like every day we have to buy our own coffee pot, and it's every day we're making ground beef. They just mention it, and in fact, it's like a minute portion of a 90-minute class.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
They also taught us how to panel on a late-night show, so don't.
They did?
Yeah.
They said, do not mention the beef in the coffee pot. Project success at all costs. Do not tell them
so
what we said.
That's so dangerous because of like how often there's a coffee pot in like a writer's panel in a writer's room. That's so dangerous. Like, I'm surely the temptation is unbearable to put a package of ground beef in that thing.
On a late-night show, if you're sitting on the couch, they will give you a coffee mug to drink water from. Do not recoil from the mug. It will not taste like beef.
Oh wait, sorry, when you say late night panel, you mean like sitting there as a guest?
Yeah, say you're not doing stand up.
I thought you meant like a writing room or something.
No, you're on like Leno and you're
and what does they teach you there? Have fun and laugh and join
to,
and chat.
Yeah, how to do your bits.
At what point do they teach you how to do comedy?
That's in second year.
Oh, that's you guys. So you didn't
they
get
make
to
you
that
wait
point.
For it.
Yeah.
So this first question comes from one of our anonymous writers online. If you want to submit a question and get our advice, you can go to How Can We Help Podcast on Instagram or Twitter and find our Google form and submit your question. Mm-hmm. Without attaching your name.
Wow.
So this comes from real people in the real world. Dear Mark and Jackie, am I good to fart in the bathroom? Especially since COVID, I feel like we're all hesitant to make any bathroom noises where there's another person in the bathroom or when there's another person in the bathroom. And to be honest, I've always felt weird about farting in the bathroom anyway. not in the stall, but at the urinal.
Oh.
There's a boy. But if I can't fart there, where then? There has to be a safe space for farting at work. Is it okay to do it at the urinal or do I need to enter the privacy of the stall? Now this is
so good.
Do we have to explain urinals to Jackie?
Wait, no, I've seen one. I know that they stink.
Maybe urinals.
What? No, they don't?
Urinals sometimes, but they have little pucks in
I'm
them.
I'm sorry. They reek.
What?
Every urinal stinks horribly.
How many urinals have you been
Every around? Time I ever accidentally walk into a guy's bathroom, I'm almost bowled over with the pungent, rank stench of a urinal. All
you know
I can smell is piss.
You know those little pucks, these urinal cakes?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So here's my question. I feel like it's an all-timer. Urinal cake or urinal pie?
Ew.
All right, so here's the question. Jackie, urinal etiquette. Adam, do you want to explain urinal etiquette to Jackie to the best of your knowledge?
Urinal etiquette is if there's 5 urinals, you don't go to the if someone's in urinal 2, you don't go to urinal 3, you'd go to urinal 4.
Right.
I would say, and this is something bros don't talk about enough, but the urinal is shaped like like one of these, right? Like a little, like one of those.
Like a basin, yeah.
And I don't know how you do it, fellas, but I always pee on the side so the pee will like swirl around, because if you pee directly into the urinal or right at the urinal, you get a more of a spray effect.
Oh, so you're being artistic, you're being strategic.
Yeah, physically you're getting less piss all over yourself if you go into the side of the urinal.
I side to like get as close to the urinal as I can to hide what I'm doing and then piss right down my leg.
It is wild when guys go so close to the urinal and you're like, what do you think I'm going to do?
Yeah, like, yeah. Are they thinking like, think that I'm you're getting trying a good, to look?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think I'm going to like start sketching or something?
I don't know why this has, why, how did urinals come to be? I think it's the most gross, disgusting.
Saves water.
Saves water.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but that stinks.
But it's nice to not have to like go through the whole ordeal of going into a stall and doing it with the toilet. Maybe that's not as much of an ordeal as like, as the big urinal.
If that's
has
an ordeal, then
me.
I'll tell you, I go through an ordeal several times a day.
But you don't have an option because you got to sit and go.
Yeah.
Like it's nice sometimes to just whip in like a horse at a trough.
In and out. I understand.
Dinky
I understand
out.
That.
Unload.
But like, but then like, I would hate to have to hear so intimately other people's piss so close to me, or like just seeing people dealing with their privates so close to me, or the farting aspect, because Elliot, my husband, has told me about people farting at a urinal.
Yeah.
And I just think to myself, oh, if I was in there even two urinals down from this person farting, I would be like so sickened and offended by that. I don't want to smell anyone's fart.
Well, I'm going to open this up. Well, I feel like you just opened it up, but I'm going to say that farting at the urinal is absolutely 110% inappropriate.
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 Thank you for validating.
Go to the stall if you need to.
Go to the stall and I don't even like, because oftentimes, especially me, when you go to the stall, you can see someone's head. You have to go to the stall and pretend that you're sit down.
Yeah.
You have to lower your head in stall,
yeah.
Sit, and fart away. If you're making noise in the stall, that's fine, but the urinal is disgusting.
But it's so funny because it's not like the noise is confined. Like, the walls aren't dimming the noise.
Right, right.
It's funny to me that there's this like sort of arbitrary little barrier, yeah, to prevent you from noise. You're still going to hear the noise. Why does it matter?
I don't know. I just feel like it's just kind of a, like it's protecting me from the secondhand embarrassment of like that person's fart, I think.
It's of imagining that ass making that sound, pushing like, out that smell.
Like I don't want to be technically in the same room as the fart.
So you think this little sort of like two-thirds
I know
wall,
it's symbolic, but yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely, I agree.
So the symbol is what we as people love symbols.
We do.
Be it the flag or the stall door that protects us from the little toot sound.
Yeah, this is semiotics, what we're discussing now.
Every time you go into a stall to fart, you have to take off your hat.
Yeah, legion rules.
A little respect. Well,
when I know I had my grandfather went to war, not for the flag, but for the liberty, the freedom, uh-huh, to protect a toot behind a stall door.
He went to Afghanistan, right? He was really old.
Yeah, because he was told by... he went to Afghanistan.
He was like 82 and he went to Afghanistan.
Yeah.
They shouldn't allow that.
Yeah, he went to Afghanistan in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
He was really old, but he lied about his age, but in the reverse way that most people don't.
Yeah. And he died there, but of a stroke.
Of a natural cause.
Yeah. Yeah. He was getting a Timmy's at the Afghan in Kandahar. He was getting a Timmy's and they didn't have, they gave him a sort of funny look when he ordered a quad.
Ew.
And then they said ew. And then he seized up out of fury.
Quad.
So are you saying it is appropriate?
It's appropriate?
Well, I don't know. And maybe this is just recency bias because I was recently at the gym and I let out a biggie
when I was
at the urinal.
Oh, God.
A big tooter.
With people around?
No, but that's the thing. No one was around. But here's the other thing is that there's no like door to the bathroom in that gym. It's the Planet Fitness. It's just sort of like a series of corridors opening up on one onto the other until you reach the locker bay. And
we've all been to the labyrinth at the Planet Fitness.
So it was just like my sound sneaking around.
Of course, because it's so cavernous and it's all like tile.
I think I'm going to let that slide. I think if you're alone, you can do whatever you want.
Yeah, I agree.
Fart-wise,
I will
bathroom.
Also say the toot was unintended.
Sure.
The toot was unintended.
Okay, well, that's a whole other layer that we're not covering of whether you're like forcing one out and blasting one out. That would be so antisocial and juvenile, in my opinion, to do.
Yeah.
But yeah, okay, so I don't fault you for that because you were all alone and it's not your fault about the architecture and the acoustic value of that place you were in.
Mm-hmm. But have you ever had a friend who was just so comfortable farting anywhere?
Not in many years.
Not yeah, same here.
I've got a friend, yeah, and it does feel like a juvenile thing, but I've got a friend who's just like, he'll just fart, and it's Kyle. And then, of course it is, right? But the thing is, and I know this is weird to attribute to like farting behavior, but he pulls it off. Like, he's just
quiet. He just has that je ne sais quoi he's that just, he can rip apart.
He's charming enough to make it work. He's charming and he's confident and he laughs at himself. So when he does it, you go, Kyle. And he just goes, I know.
But you think it's acceptable to, so yeah, you've done it. But what do you think? If you were in a room full of guys pissing every second urinal, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can go beside someone.
If it's necessary.
You're talking about the number one soggy biscuit, which is also something guys did.
What the hell is that?
You guys really never heard of soggy biscuit?
Yes, I have. But then when you say number one threw me off. Number one. God, that is so gross.
Everyone just has to pee on a...
Did you just come out of the R-rated Letterkenny writer room?
I was just in the writer's room for Shorzy.
here's a follow-up question just to gauge where we're all at here. In your relationships, what is the fart factor? How open is everybody in your relationships about farting?
Yeah,
we have a zero tolerance policy on purpose farting.
Right. Yeah. Like you're not like going ah, ha, ha, ha.
Never. And right. In fact, we are never in the bathroom together doing pee or
okay, right.
Otherwise.
Yeah. Right. Of course not otherwise.
I mean, I've been with you.
I hear people. I've heard people have been like, yeah, I poo around. That I was like, that's vile.
It's vile. Mm. It's unimaginable. It would never, ever happen. Ever.
Yeah.
In my household.
No.
Same here. Zero tolerance on purpose farting. Yeah. But also, Elliot, in our whole relationship, our whole marriage, he has maybe heard me maybe twice, maybe three times by really? Accident.
Right.
I hear him fart all the time, but he's never meaning to do it. But I'm always like, and then he's always like, oh, but then sometimes if he does, and he goes, oh dear, or he goes, oh, it's like if he comments, I'm like, don't comment. It makes it worse. If you hear a fart and then you hear, oh dear, I'm like, okay, that makes it worse.
You don't imagine it. You don't like the sort of Hugh Grant delivery of a repressed British man stammering his way through a fart apology. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I'm like that.
I'll never forgive myself. Oh, please don't tell
mother. But like, he also thinks it's funny too, so he's not like that repressed and like apologetic about it. But like, or like, like one morning because he gets up before me, and I heard him like kind of puttering around and getting ready for work, and I hear him go, "Oh, now where did I put that? And where is this?" And then I hear like, I don't want to do a fart impression, but he's like, "Oh, and oh, where have I put that again?" And then I hear a fart, and then continued muttering, and I said, "You cannot look. I understand if you." Far, and that's your, and he didn't know I was awake and could hear, but I'm like, you cannot be muttering and then punctuate it with a fart and continue muttering. That is the most sinister thing I've ever heard.
What if it was this though? What if you heard this? Oh, where did I put that? Where on earth could it be? Oh, well said. Yes, that's where it is. What if it was a helpful little sort of guide?
That would be so concerning. Yeah,
that is like a C-3PO R2-D2 relationship.
Oh my God.
Oh my R2. R2! You can't do that. R2, she's sleeping.
Well, so that's where we stand. Mark, what about you?
Well, so here's the thing. We definitely, when we started out, it was like nothing. No, zero tolerance. Not zero tolerance, but it was just like we were both just embarrassed about it.
Yeah.
We wouldn't get mad at each other. It would just be sort of like we'd laugh and it'd be embarrassing. And I think that's still where we are, but it just happens more.
Right. Okay. Interesting.
It always is like, you know, we had a running joke for a while where if she would hear me fart, then she'd go, Mark, what happened? What was that? And then I would say, oh, a guy walked by. And he did that.
You know what?
He did that. He walked by. The guy walked by. And then if it smelled, she'd go, but it smells. I'd say, oh, he piped it in. I'd say he walked by. And then this time he slid his pipe up to the window and he piped in the smell. So that became a running gag. There was a guy walking around piping it in.
Mark, we have the same running gag at our home.
You do? The guy?
No, it's not a guy. I say a deer broke into the house.
A deer?
Yeah.
It's cause for nice, but the thing is, now we've gotten to a point where oftentimes we say our pet term for it is you stank it. We say you stank it. Are you stinking it? You stank it. And then the problem is we've both gotten to a point and it's purely unintentional. I think it's just like changing diets, growing bodies. But oftentimes we will accidentally sort of Dutch oven one another.
Oh no.
At night.
Oh no.
Neath the blankets. And then sometimes we'll wake up to a truly horrible thing. But here's the issue.
Wait, is that permeates and lasts that long?
Well, the thing is, we sleep with tight blankets. Tight. We pull them down tight, like military.
Holy, be careful.
And so sometimes when you crack the blanket, it really does.
Hours leak. Later?
Hours later, it leaks out. But is it potent? It's tight. But here's the issue. When it's Carlin's.
You should go to the doctor.
Sorry, Stefan's jaw is hitting the ground right now.
The issue is that when it's my toots, nothing better. I'm truly a like that smell kind of freak.
You're so piglety.
I'm a little piglet for sure. I spend my time in the sty, and when I'm not the sty, I'm the tootin' guy.
You have enrichment time in your sty where you just smell yourself. Oh my God.
I'm the only one who watched Babe and thought, let's spend some time with the other pigs. The less civilized ones. Let me see what they're about.
Well, your story, your gag about the man or like the piping it in, there's like, you know how you have a famous story about yourself when you're a kid that you don't really remember?
Oh, yeah.
But my uncle and aunt took me and my brother bowling one night. Uh-huh. And I was really little, like probably 3 or 4, like, you know, speaking, but I can't remember this. And I guess like it started reeking and I guess I farted. And they were like, ooh, something smells, because everyone knew obviously it was me. Somehow it was very obvious. Yeah. And I threw some fucking random guy in another bowling lane under the bus. And I went, the man did it. Like, or actually no one said anything, I think. Everyone was just like, and I saw everybody kind of smelling it. I went, the man did it. And I pointed to this innocent guy bowling on his own.
Oh, wow. No.
And then that's their joke with me, is the man did it.
What year was that? Was that the same year as that big story, suicide at bowling alley? Lonely man leaves no...
That Guelph bowler who hung himself in the bathroom?
Was that they said on record the most poorly attended funeral in Guelph history?
Yeah, and the cops came in and they remarked on a stinky girl in the bowling alley.
Anyway. Wait, what's our advice for, what were you gonna ask, Adam?
Where did you land on farting in the?
Here's what I would say. I think ultimately I agree with you guys. I don't think you should be standing at the urinal and just pushing one out willy-nilly.
But it happens when you pee, right? Because you're kind of like relaxed, so you're like, your butt is relaxed.
That's right, yeah.
You can help it, though.
But is that, can you, or are you just good at being repressed?
I feel like I don't know, does that happen to women?
Not to me.
But you're always sitting. Yeah, you can hold it in.
I love to pee sitting down, and it is harder, I find, to hold it in when you're sitting down.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
But I will say this. I do think that all three of us are repressed people. And so it's easier said than done, because we truly have a lifetime of training of clenching different muscles in our body. Yeah. And I think like for someone like Kyle, who just grew up in a more like relaxed household, it would truly be like teaching an old dog new tricks. It's like change everything about yourself that is, I would say, intimately connected to how overall easygoing you are.
Right, right.
Right.
But something that used to piss me off in a public bathroom that I always had to use at my old job was this company that we shared the bathroom with, full of women, a lot of women at this like IT company. And they would talk on the phone in the bathroom while people are peeing and pooing and farting. Like, why do you want to talk on the phone in here? There's a million places to talk on the phone. Why are you having a phone conversation while I'm peeing? You want the person that you're talking to hear me peeing? Why?
Yeah, and what if you were making crazy noises? Yeah.
Power. Yes.
Power. That's what Lyndon B. Johnson used to do, apparently.
What?
Lyndon B. Johnson used to lead his aides into the bathroom, and he would sit on the toilet and do his business, and then like sort of just talk, whatever you call that, dictate to them while they had to take notes on the running of the country.
There's a type of guy who will go to the urinal and be peeing and using his phone at the urinal.
So hands free off of his dilk.
Or like one hand and then the other hand scrolling.
Yeah.
And it's like,
Can't you just take a break?
Can't you just be present?
Oh my God, I saw a picture of people in the 50s peeing at urinals, no phones.
Oh, bliss, the golden
living
era.
Living in the moment. all white because the bathroom was segregated.
That's what I love about it old movies. So you see them pissing at the urinal and with no phones.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So my advice would be grow up, go into the stall if you have to fart.
Yeah, sit down, check your phone, live your life.
Yeah. Oh, so you can check your phone in the stall, according to you, but not at the urinal.
Yeah, it's private.
Private, yeah.
Now it's time to find out what the pros knows. And this time we are going to compare our advice to advice that I found in the New York Post in the Dear Abby column.
Oh, love it.
So this is a classic Dear Abby. I don't know if it's always the same Abby. If it's obviously, I don't think it's the original Abby.
Yeah, right. If it's like the Blue Man Group, there's different Abbeys around the world.
Yes. And we, of course, have all seen Dear Abby in Vegas.
Yeah.
Here's the question. Dear Abby, I have a longtime friend, quote, Eve, whose husband just died at 55. She is, of course, devastated. To combat her grief and loneliness, she's going out every day or night with dozens of girlfriends. This is good because she's doing all kinds of new sports and activities and filling her time with interesting people and events. The problem is she has developed a close relationship with Anne. Anne did some unbelievably mean, cruel things to me and others when she hired me for a short job, and I saw how Machiavellian she really is. I know Eve will one day have a party or some other gathering and invite the two of us with others. I cannot bear to see Anne ever again. I don't want to tell Eve about my terrible encounters with Anne, but I'm certain she is vulnerable right now in her profound grief, and I'm also certain Anne is using her. Without going into more detail, what would you do? Signed, Cornered in Colorado.
Oh,
wow.
Okay.
Trick question. This woman is all three women.
Well, like right off the bat, if I'm just, you know, knee-jerking, my reaction to this is, how close are they? I would just say, she's a fucking psycho. Don't hang out with her. Like, I would say, oh my God, you know what? Let's go to lunch. And I'm going to tell you everything this fucking girl did to me.
Yeah.
I would have no problem. I don't think I would have that much of a problem saying it. But then I guess it depends on how close you are with Eve. Like, if it was like my really good friend, they would probably already know about that. So I'm assuming they're not as close.
Or maybe she doesn't connect this Anne from the Anne that you told stories about, maybe.
Oh.
Or the woman you told stories
about. But then that would make it all the more juicier to tell her. Do you know who that Anne is? That's the Anne.
Yeah.
And she'd be like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even though someone's grieving, the grieving people want to hear juice. If she's out having fun with her friends, she's going to want to hear crazy gossip too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing brings me out of a bad mood like gossip. And I'm not joking.
It's true.
I love gossip so much.
Yeah.
And especially someone you know closely now, and then someone reveals to you a dark secret about this person you're getting closer to. What's better than that?
Yes.
What is better than that?
There's nothing better. Treat Eve in her moment of need to this salacious story.
Yes.
And we in the comedy community know there's nothing better than finding out that someone you've been spending a lot of time with and seeing at shows is bad, and now you have to make a choice about whether to go to certain venues ever again. And now you're going to get constant Instagram messages asking you, interesting, you still follow that person.
Oh, God.
That's what you're advocating for, Jackie. Just to be clear, you're advocating for that behavior. Poke and prod behavior.
I want to know what Anne, I want to know more about this work. Well, obviously, I always want to know more. What happened? She was her boss for a bit. She got hired. Maybe she didn't pay her money.
Machiavellian,
that's a strong word.
Damn. Yeah, you got to tell her just for the goss.
Just for the goss, just for the juice. Now, the element that we're ignoring is that Eve, she's 55, and she's devastated. What happened?
Did her husband die.
Husband died.
Quite young.
She's very tender.
Yeah.
So let's say that let's say you were talking to me, and I am recently widowed, and I've got this new friend who's someone who fucked you over. Just to try and make it real. Would you come to me with this hot, juicy gossip if you saw that I was tender?
Ooh, now that we've made it real, I don't know.
Oh, no. I didn't know we were going to make this real. but that's the other thing, too. Like, don't you want to protect... If you care enough about this person that you care... You're worried about them being hurt by this Machiavellian character.
Mm-hmm.
Then, why wouldn't you say, hey, just to let you know, just be careful. And you know what? You don't
even have to reveal
that much information. Just say, watch yourself.
This person might... Yeah, that is the other issue. Is like, it's not just like we're... She's not just like exacting some sort of grudge against Anne. It's also she's warning Eve about the possibility that Anne's going to Anne her.
Yeah.
She's going to do something.
Now, here's a question.
Yeah.
Anne is the widowed woman. No, Eve is the widowed Eve woman. How much is our author wanting to warn Eve, and how much is the author not wanting Anne to make a friend or be close with someone?
Yes, that is a little detail that we would love to know about Cornered in Colorado. Uh-huh.
Is this about Anne envy? Or is this about Eve?
Yeah, is this about spite for Anne? Like, why should Anne be able to move on from that for her traumatic event and live a life where people perceive her as a friend?
Yeah.
Is it like, can that, Anne not change? Has Anne maybe, do you think, should she, do you, can we give Anne the
can
benefit
an
of
Anne
the doubt?
Not change?
Yeah.
Can a even Machiavelli late in life, I remember there's a famous quote in his follow-up to The Prince, which is a book where he argues that he's sorry. There's The Prince, and then there's Machiavelli's deathbed novel, or a book, I'm Sorry, his memoir. And he goes, okay, I know, yes, I'm that Machiavelli. Yes, I ran afoul with the Medici Trust, but... lonely. Holy hell. What's a Machiavelli got to do to get a friend around this place?
You know what? This is the part of the podcast inevitably where I feel dumb because I like don't really know everything that Machiavelli did. All I remember about Machiavelli is that it's a means to an end. So he says you can strike down whoever you need and trample over people to get what you need. It's just a means to an end. That was his philosophy.
Yeah,
right?
I feel like he was the original sort of like how to win friends and influence people. The original sort of like the game. Yeah. Machiavelli said that the best way to influence the people in power was to peacock and to go in and like you go up to a Medici and you say, "Oh, that's an interesting robe, Miss Medici.
Did you get it secondhand?
There's someone over there wearing the same robe."
But wait, what did he do? What did he do? Sorry, that was him negging the robe.
He's negging the Medici.
What did he do with the Medici Trust?
This is all, I mean, I don't know every detail, but it was like the Medicis were like the ruling party and the Machiavelli was like the worm tongue, you know? Okay. He was like a little sniveling weirdo in the shadows, I feel like, who was just like planting seeds and doing things to get ahead personally by essentially sowing distrust, like Survivor style. Like basically Machiavelli's like Russell Hantz on Survivor.
Okay.
Making things happen from the barely in the shadows.
Right. Like a puppet master just kind of
puppet
manipulating
master. That's
everyone.
A good way to put it. He's sort of the Jeff Dunham of the Medicis.
And he's like, Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
And then Jeff Dunham's like, you can't say that, Machiavelli.
He would put on a puppet and he would go, she wants your throne. And then he'd look over at his puppet and go, Ahmed. Yes. What is our advice for Cornered in Colorado?
My true advice is you tell Eve, listen, if there is a party where Anne is invited, please don't invite me or I don't want to see Anne. We have a thing.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I forgot about the party element. Like, what is her main concern? Is it protecting Eve or not having to see this girl?
She's inventing this party that's going to happen where Anne is going to be there.
Yeah.
So this is the problem of like someday there will be a social function where Anne and Eve are there.
Yeah, so, there's a lot going on in this message, and I think it's made Eve a slightly unreliable narrator, and frankly, a bit cringe, annoying, and I'm not into it.
Eve is not the narrator.
God damn it. The point is, I feel like Cornered in Colorado, I feel like we're all agreeing, just fucking tell her about Anne.
Or just, you don't even have to give all the nitty-gritty details. If you don't want to be a gossip like us three salacious, you know, depraved gossip mongers are, you don't have to be a gossip monger. Just say, you know what, I have had kind of like sketchy experiences with this person. Just know that, keep your eye out. And, you know, I don't really like to run in the same circles as her. And also, I'm 36. I barely have the energy to go to parties. These 55-year-old women, she's worried about some party. Say, I'm tired. I'm not going to the party where Anne is. You don't even have to say anything. Just say, I'm tired. I'm not going to the party.
And
the
also,
party doesn't even exist.
To your point, that's so good. Because if you go, I don't want to be, I've had, because then if Eve is like, oh, what did she do to you? Then you have the open door to say whatever you want.
Right.
Yeah, and then you can just go, I don't want to say. And then you can write another Dear Abby letter where you fucking complain about how hard it is with your social anxiety.
Wow. Mark really hates Cornered in Colorado.
I'm coming out swinging against Cornered in Colorado. Okay, let's compare our advice to Abby's.
Okay.
Here's what Abby says. Dear Cornered, I would tell Eve about my unpleasant experience with Anne.
Oh.
I would also mention my concern that she is emotionally vulnerable right now, and that in your experience, Anne was extremely manipulative, and she should watch her back. If she asks for specifics, I would give her chapter and verse. In the event that you are subsequently invited to a gathering where Anne will be present, give your regrets.
Simple as that. We're very aligned with Abby on this one.
Yeah. Abby's good. You know, prudence sometimes fucks around.
Yeah,
prudence But Abby does. Gets right to the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
I also like that the letter was long, but Abby's response was short.
Yeah.
In and out.
Yeah. Yeah. Guess what, Cornered in Colorado? Get over yourself.
Yeah.
Tell her about Anne.
Step out of that corner.
Yeah. I'm
no
sorry.
No one's got you gun to your head in that corner.
Are you collecting tins? No? Then spill the frickin' beans. I'm sorry. Are you saving?
He's going for another one. He's going for another one.
I'm sorry. Are you stocking up your bunker for the coming apocalypse? No? Then spill the frickin' beans.
Okay, now it's come into focus.
Beans.
Yeah.
It was about beans.
It was actually about an end of world prep. A prepper.
I don't think of the beans being like wet beans when I think of beans.
What kind of beans just, are they?
Yeah, I feel like it's like kind of like counting beans. Yeah, like the dry beans that you have in school.
Yeah.
Did you count beans in school? I went to a very rural elementary school, but we had all these kind of like speckly, they were literally just dry beans that we would use to do math. Yeah.
Honey, I'm sorry. Honey, I count beaned. Fuck.
Sorry, wait, you sorry? Oh, are you okay?
Oh,
Take it again. Did I get you with my moonstone? Did I?
Oh!
Take that one again,
Absolutely
honey.
Absolutely not.
I'm sorry. Do you work for the Heinz Corporation and you get paid per bean and each spilled bean gets docked from your pay? No? Then give yourself a break and spill the frickin' beans.
I'm sorry. Is your job at the bean field where you pick beans piecework? Oh, it's not? Then don't be afraid to spill the beans.
Yes. Yes.
Hold on.
Because
that'll
be good for the gleaners who want to come around and pick up your spilled beans.
Who's glean?
Gleaners. Oh, I'm so happy to be able to teach you about gleaners. Now, gleaners in the old days... They're people who come by after the crops have been harvested and they find all of the leftover crops that didn't get picked up in the harvest.
Oh.
They just got spilled. Oh. Taters, whatever. Apples, whatever it might be.
Okay.
And they scoop them up. So it's just individuals in the field, maybe some wheat. And they just put them in their sacks and their bags.
Oh.
And they tie them up in bundles and put them on their back. And they take them home to their little peasant shacks.
Oh.
Or like a dumpster diver.
Dumpster diver.
A freegan might be a form of modern
gleaner. Oh, yeah. There was a lot of dumpster divers in Montreal when I lived there.
Yeah, gleaners back in like the 1400s would... They also came by in their fixed gear bikes to glean for the corn and the...
on their fixies?
Yeah, they had those little dumb hats that poked up.
Oh, I hate those.
Yeah, yeah.
Adam, did you... You haven't told us yet about your Humber course on gleaning. I got to give credit to Stefan on that one. Stefan wrote that on his phone and showed it to me. He wrote Humber course on gleaners. He's too shy to chime in.
Yeah, whenever you check out of your... Make sure you get a late checkout, and then as you're leaving the hotel, go to other people's, checked out hotels and see if there's any ground beef left in the coffee machine.
Scoop up some ground beef from the inside of the filter. Yeah. The coffee filter.
And that's lunch. That's free lunch.
Turn that coffee filter inside out and put it in your mouth like a ring pop.
Sometimes
you just sucked out enough beef to have your daily protein and now you can literally get up and walk around.
Sucked enough beef.
It's time for our final segment, celebrity advice. Now, Adam, you may or may not know this, but we have a lot of celebrities who follow us.
Okay.
They're fans, and they need advice just like anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So here is our celebrity question for the episode. Dear Mark and Jackie, I've been touring with a comedy troupe for years now, and it's fulfilling, but sometimes I wonder if it's really what I want. Full disclosure, I used to be a terrorist, then I died, and now I'm a skeleton, I think, plus a puppet. My stage partner is a nice guy, even if he gets a lot of laughs at my expense and, oh yeah, puts his hand up my frickin' ass pretty often. HR? Anywho. What I'm wondering is, should I say, I kill you to this career? Or should I say, I embrace you? Signed, Ahmed the Dead Terrorist, the puppet from Jeff Dunham Shows.
Wow.
I didn't know he was dead.
Yeah, he's
dead. A skeleton?
He's a skeleton.
He is a skeleton.
That's creepy.
Yeah.
He's a post 9/11, like, triumphant symbol puppet that everyone can laugh at and also have their wishes fulfilled by him.
So, which is crazy because terrorism is like, no one talks about terrorism anymore. This is such an old
book. Right, right.
It's like, really, when was the last time you were scared of a terrorist?
Yeah. And so what did he, why is he a skeleton? He died going into the towers? Don't tell me that. I think
the idea is, no, he's a suicide bomber.
Yeah.
Right. So he died doing a suicide bomb. But so Jeff Dunham has artfully found a way to defang that type of behavior, allow us to laugh at it, and also sort of neutralize the masculinity of this individual.
Why? Because he, is he kind of coquettish?
Yeah, what do you want? What do you neutralize the masculinity?
I think I'm literally picturing that the puppet doesn't have a dick and balls hanging
off. Yeah, he's a skeleton.
It. Yeah, exactly. Huh.
Imagine there was ball or bones in the balls and dick, and a skeleton just had those three items like dangling in the pelvis area.
You had that's bones in your balls?
You're literally quoting my biology teacher from grade 10.
What, he started off with imagine?
Yeah, he said, imagine there was bones in your balls and dick and they hung off a skeleton, and then he would dangle the biology room skeleton and go, hey wait
the skeleton puppet, what's his deal? Oh, should I let this guy get laughs at my expense? There's got to be a straight man in a, if you're going to sign up to be in a comedy duo, there's always going to be one guy that's playing the straight man and getting laughs at your expense.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jeff's going to be your straight man. But I think the bigger question that Ahmed wonders is a comedy career as a touring comedian. He's been doing it for a long time now, basically right since 9/11.
Gets to travel the world.
He gets to travel the world. Those are the perks. And we're assuming that he stays in pretty nice hotels. He's not cooking up beef in any coffee makers.
Yep, yep.
If anything, he's cooking up filet mignon in coffee
makers. Ooh, delicious.
And not just coffee makers, espresso makers. Yeah. He's spraying espresso steamed water, like hot water, right on the filet mignon.
But you only want to run it like a single shot once, because you don't want it too. No, you don't want too cooked.
That's got
to
be rare.
Yeah,
yeah. But I guess his question is this a good life? And I think this is a question that we can relate to as comedians who tour. Is this enough? Because you know, a lot of comedians like the Jim Carreys of the world pivot towards hard drama and cringeworthy art. Is that a better path for us? Is it better to just sort of display mental illness in our final years, as Jim does?
Well,
and get championed for it by normies and weirdos.
Yes,
One of the craziest things in the world is a Jim Carrey video's YouTube comments are all positive about Jim Carrey.
Yeah, because the world's full of fucking maniacs and idiots and baby-brained fools who think that someone saying, be present, don't not be present, and Trump go away is like a fucking hero who's attained Buddha's own wisdom.
I know that he went crazy and I know that he was making all that like cringe pop art, but I don't know what he was saying on his videos.
Oh, it's just like
It's
like borderline schizophrenic new age wisdom.
Okay.
Yeah. About it's like, just like being who you are and not
nothing matters.
Nothing
very like nihilist and like
nothing matters.
He will show up in a full suit to some red carpet event, and some like female like interviewer will be like, "Hey, nice to see you, funny man Jim Carrey." And he's like, "Funny, I'm not funny today.
Oh, I've seen.
I'm
stuff
actually
like that,
nothing
yeah.
matter. This is a useless trophy that I will be offered today, and it is made out of metal and nothing else. And this is all a vapid excuse for. And it's like, you showed up.
Yeah. Why? No one has a fucking gun to your head.
Why are you here?
It's like
it's
literally
so
like first year university brain.
Like apathy.
Except the problem is like he's coming to it late because he spent the first 60 years of his life as like a fun loving but neurotic and anxious kind of jokester. And he was living a fun life. So most of us ease up with age because we go through that sort of dark, brooding, stupid, philosophical, like Holden Caulfield phase early.
And, his whole
and then we like look back on it and we go, yikes, I was taking myself a bit too seriously. Like when I kept asking the professor, what is I?
Yeah.
You know?
This skeleton, this is what he should do. He should, no, you have enough. This is the thing. Don't look the gift horse and the mouse. You're a touring comic on a successful tour. Yes, you may be questioning your artistic, compass once in a while. Do you feel like you're selling out? You feel this or that way? But, you know, at least you're not going mental and becoming something that you're not, to becoming some nihilist philosopher who's rude to, people in the press.
Yeah,
that's true.
Buck up, you racist puppet.
Yeah, actually be happy for that. You've even got this far.
Yeah.
Being, made out of what? Is it cloth? I'm not sure.
It's got to be felt.
Felt?
Some sort of, combination of materials. I think
Fimo.
What's that? Fimo? Yeah.
Fimo? What's Fimo?
Oh, yeah. You guys aren't Gales.
I think that's the organization that was helping out after Hurricane Katrina.
FEMA was like a clay that we would make like bracelets with in the 90s and then you put it in the oven.
That's why Bush, everyone was mad at Bush, is because he sent FEMO instead of FEMA.
Yeah. Just put some FEMO down on the banks. Sandbags, you mean? FEMO. Oh, he's in the pocket of big FEMO again.
Oh, I would kill for a FEMO kit.
I agree with what you're saying, but I feel like, Ahmed, we all get to this point where we question what we're doing. It can be hard as an adult doing comedy because it's such a child's idea of a career. And yes, you can get to a place where you feel pretty silly and maybe you want to explore other sides of your artistry and do that. Don't stop yourself. No one's stopping you from writing a short story, doing a serious play or a film, even doing a one-person show if you want to stick to the live experience. But that doesn't mean you should resent the, you know, the thing that got you to where you are now. You're good at comedy. If you're a little burnt out.
Man, all of our advice are coming from such true places, such deeply personal places.
Yes.
Yeah. Ahmed, or should I call you Mark?
Wow.
But that's it. I mean, I think ultimately, you know, we live in a culture that tells goofy comedians that they love them, but also don't respect them. I'm thinking of like awards culture. And you can understand how that erodes someone like Jim Carrey's sense of self-worth.
Right.
But I think you have to look at how much people love it, how much you used to love it, and if you're burnt out, just take a break. But don't fucking turn on the whole enterprise.
Yeah.
Don't turn yourself into a silly philosopher. Oh, yeah, and the greatest fucking foolery that I've ever heard is that comedians are the modern philosophers. Don't ever buy into that fucking crock of shit.
Yes.
Holy hell. Anytime you think that comedians are the modern philosophers, just remember beef in a coffee maker. And ask yourself if that was what Plato was telling the Greeks. Just like, yeah, if modern philosophy is Louis C.K. telling you to appreciate what modern technology has brought while sitting on a plane, or like if it's George Carlin telling you that the media is mean, I don't know. I guess get what you need out of it, but
yeah.
That's good advice.
Yeah, that's good advice.
That's good advice. We gave a lot of advice.
Yeah, enjoy being silly.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Adam, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having
Adam,
me.
Thank you so much. Such a delight.
Where can people find you and what are you up to?
Just Instagram, baby.
Yeah.
Check out AdamChristie87 on Instagram. That's it.
Nice.
Oh, great year.
Great year.
Join us next time. Don't forget to write in your questions. Go to How Can We Help Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. Our link is there to submit your anonymous questions. Don't forget to do that, please.
That's right. Bye, everyone.
I love you. Bye.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Sonar Network.